your mountains, deserts, and streams. Rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading from Arizona Highways. From the April 2025 issue of Arizona Highways, going to start out today with the editor's letter by Robert Steve. It was a good year, 1925. The Great Gatsby hit bookshelves. The Grand Ole Opry transmitted its first radio signal, and Leica marketed the world's first 35mm camera. In the world of music, Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington made their first recordings, and at the grocery store, Corona, Burma Shave, and Sugar Daddy Caramel Pops started showing up. It was a good year for birthdays, too. Born in 1925 were Paul Newman, Dick Van Dyke, Johnny Carson, B.B. King, and a magazine called The New Yorker, which published its first issue on February 21, 1925. A few weeks later, in April 1925, Arizona Highways made its debut. It was a humble beginning. The magazine's offices were reached by entering the Highway Department's engineering building, said Gary Avey, our ninth editor. From there, you'd go out the back door into the equipment yard, past the new equipment and maintenance shops, and then past the wrecked vehicles to the back of the yard. There were three adobe rooms up against a wall that separated the yard from the Santa Fe Railroad tracks. The floors were made of linoleum tiles laid on dirt. We worked from the old adobes until 1948, when we moved into a new 6,000-square-foot brick building on the corner of 17th Avenue and Jackson Street. 14 years later, in 1962, we moved into our world headquarters on West Lewis Avenue. The slop block building, which measures 102 by 114 feet, was built by the Marshall Construction Company of Phoenix for $143,212. When adjusted for inflation, that's about $1.5 million. Walking in, it doesn't feel expensive. It feels more like a mid-century middle school where teachers with names like Mrs. Wessenberg and Mr. Fritz would have taught reading, writing, and arithmetic. There's nothing sophisticated about our building, but it's where we do our best to carry on the legacy of Raymond Carlson, George Avey, and Jim Stevens. They're the heroes of our story, Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, the father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. As editor, art director, and business manager, those three men envisioned and built a phenomenon. Never in the history of publishing had there been a magazine quite like Arizona Highways. Like Gatorade, Frisbees, and Ferris Wheels, it was an idiosyncrasy. A magazine so unique it was banned in the Soviet Union because its beautiful pages propagandized the American way of life. Without those men, we wouldn't have been. But it wasn't just them. There were so many others who played a role. I can do things you cannot. You can do things I cannot, Mother Teresa said. Together we can do great things. I wish I could tell you something about everyone who has ever worked here, but there's no filing cabinet filled with personnel records, no hints, no clues, and even if there were, I'm limited by the dimensions of our pages and a word count dictated by designers who see words as blocks of gray space. A gallon gets 128 ounces. I get 1,500 words, or 15 words for every year we've been publishing Arizona Highways. That's not enough, which is why I am excited to be writing a book about the history of the magazine, a hardback with enough space to spell out the details and share some of the stories I've learned. Meanwhile, here are two of my favorites. Like squinting through a keyhole, each story offers some insight into the mad genius of our editor emeritus. About 5 years ago, I was sitting on a couch in central Phoenix with Willis Peterson, a longtime photographer. He was 96, but sharp like a scalpel. He told so many stories. The best was about kangaroo rats and a story he'd pitched to Raymond Carlson. He'd done a similar piece for Audubon and figured it would be an easy sell. It wasn't. No, Mr. Carlson said. I'm not going to have a goddamn rat in my magazine. I didn't know what to say, Mr. Peterson said. George Avey, the art director, was standing in the doorway. I looked at him. His eyes said, don't push it. Then Mr. Carlson, a little less gruff, said, "Come back later. I think we can do better than that." "For 2 days," Mr. Peterson said, I couldn't shake his response. Finally, I called him at home and asked to see him, even though that's a no-no. A writer never calls his editor at home. I wondered if my writing career for Arizona Highways would be over. However, his wife answered the phone. "Certainly, Willis. Come right over. Raymond is here." I drove across town, muttering about what I'd say. I knocked on the door, noting that it was the famous Frank Lloyd Wright home I'd heard about. "Come in, Willis," Mrs. Carlson said pleasantly. "Raymond is upstairs." She pointed to a stairway. I climbed a few steps, which opened into a mezzanine floor. Mr. Carlson was bent over a long light table where he could study transparencies. "Well, Pete, what brings you to see us?" He offered me a drink. Flustered at first, I started to explain how interesting kangaroo rats really are. "See," I said, "he even seems pious, clasping his little hands. Is he praying for a second chance?" Mr. Carlson quipped. My mind raced as he read my story. Then he took my transparencies and laid them out on the light table. "All right, Pete, it looks as though we can do something on what you have here. Would you like another drink?" I took it for fear of not being friendly, hoping I wouldn't be too tipsy while driving home. A few days later, the phone rang. "That little mouse animal of yours," Mr. Carl said, laughing. "He's got the funniest face I'd ever seen. What do you suppose he's thinking about?" More laughter. "Does he always jump around like that with his hands bigging under his nose?" More laughter. "A little pious bigger. That's him, all right." I heard someone else laughing in the background, then laughing some more. Mr. Carlson hung up on me. I turned to my wife, flabbergasted. "That was Raymond Carlson," I said. "He must be muddled. One too many. I never heard him talk like that before. What a turnaround, from damning my article to finding it so funny he had to call me." We stared at the phone in wonder. Niall Latham was a newspaper photographer who eventually became a contributor. He got off to a slow start. "My Raymond Carlson story," he said, "happened in 1953. I'd taken some shots in the Superstition Mountains with my $30 Agfa isolate. Later, out in Burbank, I made some prints. I thought they were good. How could any Arizona Highways editor not write me a check? The fantasy gave me the courage to walk in on Mr. Carlson cold turkey. Instead of throwing me out, he said, 'Help me clear this desk and we'll look at your stuff.' He handed me a thick brown paper package. As I untied the string, I read the name, Ansel Adams. The pictures were all 5x7s or 8x10s, not enlargements, contact prints, each mounted on clean white cardboard with penciled notes. The subject was Northern Arizona. All were razor sharp, perfectly balanced, austere compositions with not the slightest dust spot or image flaw. I didn't know that such black and white tones were even possible. Mr. Carlson gathered them up. 'Nothing special here,' he said. 'Let's look at yours.' I said, 'Mr. Carlson, I'll see you in about 2 years,' and I fled. And looking back, I wondered if he'd kept such a package on hand for such a lesson. I never had the pleasure of meeting Raymond Carlson, but he and I share a place in the history of this magazine, along with the other 12 editors who were tasked with the challenge of telling the Arizona story. In 1963, Mr. Carlson wrote about how hard that is. 'I've been editor of Arizona Highway since 1938, he said. In the spring of that year, after my third or fourth issue, I was confronted with the awful and terrifying realization that we were running out of material. Now, 25 years later, I'm confronted with the still more awful and still more terrifying realization of how inadequate we've been in telling the Arizona story. 6 decades after he wrote those words, we still haven't told the entire story, but we're not finished yet, not even close. We'll see you again in May with a few more stories. Meantime, on behalf of everyone at Arizona Highways, thank you for getting us to this milestone. We're sincerely indebted." And this concludes Editor's Letter. Next up, letters. Editor's note: we get a lot of letters from all over the world, and opening them is a sacred ritual for me, especially those that are handwritten. It's humbling to think that the work we do can inspire someone to sit down with a pen and a piece of paper, express their thoughts, seal them up, and send them our way. Our readers have been doing that for decades, and their commentary offers an important assessment of how we're doing. This month, as we look back on a century of publishing, we thought you might enjoy seeing some of the impressive letters that came our way in the early years. June 1939, Boulder Dam and Lake Mead. In your April issue, we were particularly interested in the article Sailing on Lake Mead. It seems that a little piece on the Boulder Dam recreational area featuring Lake Mead's booming attraction for sailors has a place in one of your summer issues. We must add that your magazine is one of the most unique publications we have seen in a long time. After reading several copies of it, one cannot help but become decidedly Arizona-minded. There can be no doubt about its effectiveness in publicizing your state's scenic and cultural attractions. Submitted by David V. Cleary, The Buick Magazine, Detroit, Michigan, July 1939, March 1940. His Royal Highness is pleased. His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince of Norway, has ordered me to thank you most sincerely for your kindness in sending him Arizona Highways Magazine, which His Royal Highness has been very interested to read. I am further desired to thank you for your kind greetings and to convey to you His Royal Highness's best wishes for a Happy New Year. Submitted by N.R. Asgard, Adjutant to His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince of Norway, Oslo, Norway, September 1940. Reception in Hollywood. Emily Berry tells me that it is to you that I am indebted for the beautiful Indian number of your magazine, which reached me a day or two ago. I can't tell you how impressed I am with it or how much I appreciate your sending me a copy. Although we are fortunate enough to own the Curtis set on the North American Indian, we are constantly in need of more material. Submitted by Helen Gladys Percy, Head of Research Department, Paramount Pictures, Inc., Hollywood, California. October 1940. When Mr. Cobb writes an article, I just want to congratulate you on the peach of an article by Irvin S. Cobb in the July issue about Rainbow Bridge National Monument. The story is both human and inspiring, and the most delightful presentation of the subject it has ever been my privilege to read. Pictures, too, are excellent, though we have learned always to expect that of Arizona Highways. We were always proud of Rainbow Bridge National Monument. Now that we have seen your July issue, we are practically bursting with pride. Submitted by Hugh M. Miller, Superintendent, National Park Service, Coolidge, Arizona. July 1941, the December issue. I just want to add my congratulations to the hundreds of others I know you will receive for your beautiful Christmas number. I think you have set a new high not only for the Southwest, but for the entire United States. It is a beautiful book, reflecting credit to you and your staff and the printers. Submitted by Randall Henderson, editor, The Desert Magazine, El Centro, California. March 1941. An Odyssey of the Green and Colorado. I have received the 25 copies of the January issue of Arizona Highways with mailing folders. It was very kind of you to send these, and I thank you very much. They will be used to a good advantage, and those receiving them from me will be the type of persons most likely to follow through into Arizona. It amazes me how large a coverage or circulation you have. I have received letters from all over the United States commenting on the excellent story and pictures on the river trip. You have a mighty fine magazine and really worthwhile. Submitted by Norman D. Nevels, Mexican Hat Lodge, Bluff, Utah. June 1941. We'll try to keep it up. I just want to add my humble words of thanks and praise for your splendid Arizona Highways magazine. Each month for nearly a year, it has been a most welcome visitor. You brew a strong and overpowering medicine. Just one sip from the first issue and a new reader becomes permanently intoxicated by the beauty, the charm, and the glamour of Arizona. Your standard is so high that it's a mystery how you can keep it up month after month. I fully realize how much work it means. You can rest assured, though, that the Friends Arizona Highway wins and holds more than compensate for all the effort expended in its preparation. Submitted by James P. McCloskey, editor, enthusiast, Harley-Davidson Motor Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. July 1941. Ammunition for Monument Valley. The May issue of Arizona Highways with the Monument Valley story is proving to be a dead shot. Everyone so far I have sent a copy to has written back for reservations and has chosen the Arizona route in. It is certainly a choice piece of ammunition to fire at a prospect. Numerous parties arriving, say the May issue of the magazine, led them out here. Thanks to a real combination, our friends, Joy Munch for her rounding up the right bunch of words and putting them together so as to pack the real feeling you enjoy when you visit this magnificent valley. Josef Munch and Jack Breed for drawing a bead on and hitting some mighty choice bullseyes that are hidden about Monument Valley for those who like to shoot a camera. Submitted by Harry Golding, Monument Valley, Utah. October 1941. Note from GM. Our efforts to present Arizona to many of the executives of General Motors Corporation as an unexcelled location for a proving ground for continuous 12-month automobile testing have been immeasurably helpful by your splendid magazine. Through the medium of its splendid articles and illustrations, these men have a more thorough knowledge of the state and its advantages of fine highways, unexcelled climate, and excellent facilities of transportation and accommodations than could have been obtained in any other way. It has also been the means of bringing many of these men and their families to Arizona to enjoy its advantages as a vacation wonderland. We congratulate the executive of the State Highway Commission, and you and your staff for making this very excellent magazine available. In no way could the natural and man-made wonders of Arizona be more effectively publicized. Submitted by H.H. Barnes, Manager, General Motors Sales Corporation, Phoenix, Arizona. December 1941. The Park Service. We in the National Park Service appreciate the space you devote time and again in your magazine in bringing the areas under our administration to the attention of the public. Arizona's many and diversified attractions could not hope for better interpretation than through Arizona highways. Submitted by Newton B. Drury, Director, National Park Service, Washington, D.C. October 1942. $10 worth. Today I received a notice that my subscription to Arizona Highways was about to expire, and so I am enclosing a check for $10, for which please advance my subscription to August 1952. Perhaps you as editor and perhaps the commissioners as such would like to know why I like Arizona highways as it has been the last few years I have known it. Most of all, I like it because it has kept its grand pictures of the state. Also, I like it because it has used its pages to advertise the state and not the various business houses in the state, realizing fully, of course, that advertisements help cut the cost of publication considerably. I like it, too, because the editor's own writings tend to be more poetic than newspaper-puristic. Also, while Arizona Highways is a roads paper, it is not a concrete roads paper and does not forget the byways in the rush of the highways. I like Arizona Highways because it doesn't have a section for poets, although I dabble in the art myself. I like it, too, because it does not have a book review section. I like it, too, because it keeps the present war copy to a minimum, realizing, I hope, that great Arizona will be around for a long, long time after all this is over. If that isn't your idea of $10 worth of reasons, I can think up some more. Thanks for a grand little magazine and a prayer for its long continuance. Submitted by Gaston Burbridge of Downey, California. November 1942. Viva Mexico. It seems to me you have done a remarkably fine job in your September issue on the beauties of Mexico. It is so good I am passing it on to a friend of mine in the Mexican Embassy. Submitted by H. A. Wallace, Vice President of the United States, Washington, D.C. June 1946. Map suggestion. Knowing my love of your desert, a friend has sent me a copy of your beautiful publication. I noted that you welcome suggestions, so would make this comment. The inclusion of a small map would be of great help and interest to readers. This may be as detailed as the compilers think fit, but main physical features and chief towns might be indicated. Also, the location of places mentioned in the current text and pictures. Submitted by Miss M. L. Benson, Gordon, New South Wales, Australia. October 1946. Letter from Shine. I have seen the August issue of the magazine and wish to thank you for your contribution to our cause. Of course, I appreciate Tony's article about me and your editorial, but most of all, the whole issue is a great boost to our Navajos. If I had tried to put out something that would be a presentation of the Navajo to the best advantage, I could not have imagined anything so good as your August publication for our movement. After reading it, one has the feeling that nothing is too small to be of importance for these worthy people. So I am under great obligation to you and your staff. Very fine is your tribute to the Navajos who took part in the war, and I heartily concur with you in your opinions and congratulate you on your grasp of this important angle of a new Navajo destined to take a vital place in American life, submitted by Shine Smith, Among the Navajos, November 1946, the works of Ansel Adams. As a former member of the board of directors of the Sierra Club of California, I have been extremely interested for many years in the work of Ansel Adams, who has recently contributed to your journal. It seemed to me that Mr. Adams has done such a remarkably fine piece of work in his photography of the desert country that I got into the habit of opening the magazine first to the middle in hopes of seeing another picture by Ansel Adams. I am writing this letter because of the fact that I missed this photograph in the last edition, and in hopes that I may lend my voice to the many you must have heard requesting that you continue, if possible, to publish work by Ansel Adams, since I think he has made a very real contribution to the color photography of the Arizona country, submitted by Dr. Harold E. Crow of Los Angeles, California, January 1949. Greetings, namesake. Just after I sent you a note congratulating you on the Christmas number, Mrs. Isabel Begay, your Navajo Madonna on the cover of the Christmas issue, gave birth to a bouncing boy at Sage Memorial Hospital. His name, Raymond Carlson Begay, submitted by Dr. Clarence Salisbury, Ganado Mission, Ganado, Arizona, January 1949. Dam, boulder, or couver? As one who has been a subscriber to your magazine for many years, I wish to make a strenuous objection to your labeling the cover on your November issue as Boulder, Hoover Dam. The dam is named Hoover Dam by our Congress, and the name Boulder does not belong to it, and the sooner it is forgotten, the better. I believe in calling things by their right names. Submitted by Mrs. George Stephen, La Jolla, California. Boulder or Hoover? That is a question. Congress has decreed the name should be Hoover, but the Arizona State Legislature has not changed the name from Boulder. Changing place names in Arizona is a violation of the law, and until our legislature sees fit to change the name, your humble editor must string along. For the time being, we'll use both names. We predict the next Congress will change the name again. It seems the Democrats, or something like that, will be back in the saddle again. July 1949. Slides. Is it possible to purchase Kodachrome slide pictures of cactus flowers, birds, trees, scenery, or other attractive things found in Arizona, similar to the pictures which appear in your magazine? I took some on a recent trip to your state, but wish now that I had taken many more, and would appreciate knowing if there might be any for sale which could be used on a projector for 828 film. Submitted by Mrs. Walter C. Flower of Maplewood, New Jersey, November 1949, Swiss Alps. Imagine your magazine comes all the way to the Swiss Alps, and you should see the family almost fighting over it. Who's going to read it first? The articles about your ranches, the Heffords, the Brahmins, are read with the greatest interest, and even if conditions here on our small farm are absolutely different, there is always something we can learn. Thank you for a colorful and wonderful magazine, submitted by Mary Louise Luscher of Zurich, Switzerland. May 1950, Letter from Africa. I thank you from my heart for the gift of Arizona highways. It is charm for us to see a country so different from ours, which is only flowers and forests. I never tire of examining again its illustrations so admirably made and wondering what this country that I shall never see in reality, but only in imagination. Submitted by Dr. Albert Schweitzer, French Equatorial Africa. June 1951. Saga of Uncle Jim. J.T. Uncle Jim Owens was an animal hunter in the Yellowstone Park when the ravages of cougars required his services on the Kaibab, or Buckskin, Plateau. En route, he stopped at Ogden, Utah, where I was disbursing clerk for the Forest Service, and for years we were good friends. He had several good hunting dogs, among them Old Pot, wisest of them all, and the favorite of Uncle Jim. He gained his name from his slightly drooping stomach, induced by overeating in his later years, but he bore the reputation of the most sagacious of all lion-hunting dogs, and he did not waste time on the trail of anything but a lion, for his keen scent immediately told him the difference, and he also knew which direction the lion had been traveling. Care was taken to kill a tree lion at first shot, lest, attacked by the valuable dogs, the dogs might be hurt in a fight. Theodore Roosevelt did well in choosing for his lion hunting both the Kaibab and Uncle Jim as guide, and a great interest was taken in his visit. He enjoyed a short dinner nap, and to afford him both shade and privacy, a small tent was pitched. But old Pot, accustomed to being pampered, took possession and objected to being dislodged. "Leave him alone," said the ex-president, who loved a good dog. "There's room for us both." And during the rest of the hunt, Teddy Roosevelt and Old Pot, who enjoyed the distinction, shared the cool shade in the tent. Submitted by Quincy R. Kraft of Albuquerque, New Mexico. November 1965, Ross Santee. I was shocked and saddened to read of the death of Ross Santee. I have long been an admirer of his work, although I was not aware that he was a writer as well as an artist. All I have ever seen were his sketches, which spoke so much of the people and the country, submitted by Mrs. M. Jean Strong of Santa Cruz, California. And that concludes today's readings from the April 2025 issue of Arizona Highways. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
I love you, Arizona. Your mountains, deserts, and streams rise in Dos Cabezas, and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Log on to sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.